Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington, D.C.
We're free to form our own institution, and we will ask each partner of charity to decide for which side they want to be aligned with. If they want to be with the people of Chad, they need to decide, or if they want to continue to support a militia group, that they need to make it clear for everyone of us to know.
Chad's opposition Transformers Party says it will boycott the national dialogue between the military junta, civilian and opposition groups Saturday.
If it is found that some votes were wrongly put in the basket of the winning candidate, that could tilt the constitutional requirement of 50 plus 1. So the going to Supreme Court, I think, is a very good idea. It is going to also help the country heal.
Kenya's outgoing president, Uhuru Kenyatta, assures a United States delegation of a peaceful transition to a new administration.
IEBC in Kenya do to ensure that they have a framework to conduct a fair election. I think there was also a lot of effort that was invested into ensuring that there's an effective election dispute resolution mechanism, and that includes the judicial process.
And an African Association of Election Authorities carries out a solidarity mission during Kenya's August 9 general election. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. In Chad, the opposition Transformers Party says it will boycott the national dialogue between the military junta, civilian and armed opposition groups Saturday. The party claims the dialogue will not be a true reflection on what citizens want. The national dialogue was planned to follow a recent agreement signed between the military ruler Mahmoud Idriss Deby and more than 40 opposition groups in Doha, Qatar. This following mediation efforts by Qatar. The Transformers Party argues that the best way forward is a national dialogue with equal representation to discuss the formation of a civilian-led transitional government. For more on the decision behind the opposition party's boycott of the national dialogue, I reached Dr. Ndolembai Njeseda Sadi. He is the vice president in charge of the diaspora and bilateral relationships for the Transformers Party.
Unfortunately, as of now, we will not be part of the dialogue. And this is for multiple reasons. As the word dialogue itself means die, which means two people that need to dialogue in order to come up with a consensus. And as of now, from the technical team that are organizing the dialogue all the way to the people who are participating at the dialogue have been picked by the ruling team concurrently. The military council, and we have reached out to them on multiple occasions to tell them that we have a political weight here and we need to have an equal quota of participants in order to have a balanced discussion. And yet they have been ignoring this request, and in fact we have been calling our militants and anyone who's facing injustice for the last 32 years to come to our headquarters, to the Balcony of Hope, this coming Saturday at August 30th at 6 a.m. So that all together we can walk to the palace where the dialogue will be happening and to tune in a motion that we wrote requesting some sincerity in what is happening. Because for the last 4 years...
But Ndolembai, if you will protest and go to the venue without you participating, are you not going to be disrupting, basically thwarting what the people are trying to do in this national dialogue?
We are not protesting. We are marching to go and deliver a specific message. And that has to be clearly understood because, as I said, this is still a monologue going on. And we will not agree for the same people to get together and decide the future of this nation. It has to be everybody. This situation happened very, very rarely in this nation. So this is our opportunity to build a strong foundation for this country. We will not be contributing to this demagogy and continue to let the Deby clan continue to hold this country hostage. Yes, it's time for them to listen to what the people of Chad want. We are not alone. We have all the political party and civil society association organization groups who are voicing the same thing we are voicing. And even the fact the rebel groups who kill President Deby refused to sign Doha Accord based on the same condition that we have.
In Dolomai, a prominent Chadian rebel leader arrived on Thursday to be part of this dialogue. Some people see that as a fundamental step in trying to heal the nation and try to resolve some of the challenges that the country faces. You don't think that's a good idea? Why?
The main rebel groups that we know that have been causing issue to this regime is the FACT rebel group. They have not signed this accord and they are not in N'Djamena. So those who are coming, those are the same cousins and nephews and uncle. So this is basically a family reunion, meeting together, and the men in Doha, they share the piece of pie, and they are coming here to seal whatever they talk about and continue to hold the country, the people of Chad hostage. And we are not going to co-sign that by showing up and giving our approbation.
So what happens if you present your petition? What do you want to prove by that? And what is the objective of it?
Well, since we've been dialoguing with them privately, telling them what the people want, and they are not hearing it, then this is our contribution, what we're bringing to the table. If you are not taking into consideration, you and I know that the militia group right now do not have the blessing of the people. The junta who is ruling the country is doing it out of a constitutional law. So we have the right as Chadians form our own government and run a parallel Chad that wants justice, that wants inclusivity, and that wants equality for all. And that's what our message is. If they are not willing to even postpone this dialogue and allow us to be sitting together and discuss on the topics and have equal number of participants so that we can have a sincere conversation about the future of this country, then we are free to form our own government, we are free to form our own institution, and we will ask each partner of Chad to decide for which side they want to be aligned with. If they want to be with the people of Chad, they need to decide. Or if they want to continue to support a militia group, then they need to make it clear for everyone of us to know.
Dr. Ndole Mbai Njeseda Sadi is the vice president in charge of the diaspora and bilateral relationships for the Transformers Party. He spoke with me from the Chadian capital in N'Djamena. In Nigeria, an appeals court has ruled in favor of a gubernatorial candidate of the main opposition People's Democratic Party, or PDP. The court's decision makes Segun Sowore, a candidate for governor of the PDP for Ogun State in Nigeria's general election next year. This after an intra-party dispute following claims of unfair treatment against Sowore. He says leaders of the main opposition party were biased against him and favored Ladi Adebutu and others contesting to represent the party in Ogun State. He petitioned a lower court where he accused Ogun State executives of the PDP for allegedly buying nomination and interest forms for Adebutu and another without doing the same for the other candidates, including himself. The court's ruling did not favor him, prompting Sowore to appeal the decision. For more on the ruling, electoral prospect, and what residents of Ogun State should expect from him, I read Segun Sowore.
I have been clear that of all the things that I think bothers us now in the country is that we have not made enough demands of our lower run of the ladder second tier government called governors. And I have insisted that if governors would just pay a bit more attention to the important things that they ought to pay attention to. For instance, I believe that it is right now for us to figure out precisely what we want to do with education. I'm actually talking relative to the fact that if we find out that we are having a bit of challenging people feeling that is education important or is it not important, that we now need to pay attention to early education and make it free so that the children of the haves and the have-nots will have a level playing ground by the time they get to the sixth year where the federal system commences. I also believe that in terms of security, which is another big problem in the country now, that it's not enough for the state government to claim that the federal government has all the apparatus of security in their control. that they could do a whole lot more by identifying the people that live in their state and verifying them to a verifiable address, which means that you capture them by biometric to an address, which makes it easy for you to at least ascertain whether whatever has happened by someone that can be found in the state or someone that cannot be found in the state. I've also believed that there is no reason why we will not have the ability to use Google Maps to bring us to locations within states that we will not be interested in, you know, finding a way to have low Earth orbit satellite to map out the state and look at the state with some kind of eye in the sky. These and a whole lot more are some of the things. I also believe that the built-up environment must be reviewed to ensure that we are not creating big shanties, all in the bid to say we're running mega states.
With respect to leveling the playing field with regards to education, how will you fund this project and how sustainable would this be after even you leave office?
Okay, what I have imagined is that, imagine for a second that we have a primary healthcare system that takes people to one state or the other, and that in every primary healthcare system, the idea is that you're supposed to have a primary healthcare system in a ward. Imagine that we just did an addition of another hall within the primary healthcare system situation, and then we just employed some nurses so that young people that are very, very young can be given early education, early, you know, the services that make up a nursery school, which I think it would slip up a little bit on our excessive love of culture. We can find the resources to be able to do that. Then imagine if we wrote into the law that councillors and House of Assembly members from that area are duty-bound to see it as their conservative project, that children that are born in that environment are given the opportunity to have early education. When you think about what we do now, and you think about how much it will cost to do that, and the level of support that is available within the international community and donor agencies, you will be able to realize that it makes more sense for you to interfere at early education for children, so that you can also interfere with their nutrition and you can make sure that they have the basic skills that can prepare them to the already funded federal government universal basic education.
If the Ogun people, prospective voters in Ogun State, decides to make you the governor or elect you as governor, what specific measures will you put in place to fight corruption?
I've argued often in public fora that we seem to have created a paradigm in our mind where the thief that is my relative is not a thief, but some kind of Robin Hood. And what has happened is that it has now meant that the fields of state have been plummeted, and everybody has waited for the leadership at the national to come and help them catch a thief that is before their nose. I think that it is the absence of sure consequence that has made this kind of attitude to fester. And I can guarantee you, just by the sheer determination to look into the books and the determination to use state laws to punish, we would have started to head back from this very gory situation that has frustrated even the donor agencies and even sometimes even the resources of state, wherein the total resource of state, we cannot even find, you know, the money on the ground, not in the infrastructure they claim to do, nor in the services they claim to provide.
Segun Sowomi is a gubernatorial candidate for the main opposition PDP. He spoke with me from the Nigerian capital, Abuja. Kenya's outgoing president, Uhuru Kenyatta, has assured a United States delegation of a peaceful transition to a new administration. He met with Senator Chris Coons, who led a U.S. delegation that included the top U.S. envoy to Kenya, Ambassador Meg Whitman. Kenyatta said the East African country will remain a steadfast and shining example of democracy and good governance. His remarks follow a dispute over the outcome of last week's presidential election. The Independent Elections and Boundaries Commission, or IEBC, declared incumbent Deputy President William Ruto winner of the presidential vote with 50.5% of the total vote cast. Former Prime Minister Raila Odinga came in second with 48.8%, but he rejected the outcome, promising to legally challenge the results in court. The U.S. delegation also met with President-elect Ruto as well as Odinga. For analysis and the latest political developments, I reach Attorney James Mwamu. He is a former chairman of the Law Society of Kenya.
The president is just echoing the constitutional provisions that are very clear that once an election has been done, if there is no challenge to those elections or if there is a challenge, depending on the outcome of the case that is supposed to be filed by the Azimio la Umoja presidential candidate Raila Amolo Odinga, then he will hand over. That is what the constitution says. Of course, that also depends on the outcome of the case that is yet to be filed. Of course, as Azimio said, they will file their case by Monday. Now, the case of the Supreme Court, three things can happen. One, the case may be dismissed. Two, it can be allowed. And three, if it is allowed, the court, of course, can order two things. They can order a rerun. They can also, if it is a clear case, tabulate the figures and declare the winner.
President-elect Samuel Ruto met with the senators, and he assured them of strong relations with Washington. What do you make of his statement? Because it looks like they want to smooth the relationship between Nairobi and Washington.
Since Kenya gained its independence in 1963, Kenya has been a strong ally of the U.S. and the U.K. The U.S. have a lot of investment in Kenya. They have their army in Mombasa, the Navy is in Mombasa, the Marine is in Mombasa, and many other U.S. installations. The U.S. has also contributed quite a lot in the health sector, you know, the areas like HIV. Then also, again, the fight against terrorism and the fight against Al-Shabaab. Kenya is a strategic partner, both on the war against terrorism in the sea and in the land. So I do not think that whichever president comes in will make any difference to that relationship. But I think that the U.S. was quick to come and ensure that relationship will continue. Because, of course, there's a threat coming from the East. China has also invested quite a bit in Kenya. So it is important that the U.S. also comes in early to ensure that that relationship is going to be smooth. Nothing is going to happen. The other thing, of course, that I think the U.S. does not want is to have an unstable partner. You know, when you are fighting terrorists and then you also have a stable partner, it becomes difficult to deal with those kind of things that require that the bilateral relationship that you have with the other country is smooth and you can operate without any hindrance.
The team also met with former Prime Minister Raila Odinga, who also said he was going to pursue the legal option to challenge the outcome of the election on Monday. But does he have a legitimate cause to challenge the election result based on the local and international poll observers whose tally, they said, was almost the same as that of the IEBC, the election management body?
You know, election observers are interesting people. Even in 2017, they said that the elections were free and fair, but the court annulled those elections. So I have not seen the evidence, and I think they are still collecting the evidence. It will be too early for me to speak as to whether they have a case or not. But one of the things that I think I would allow to be as a new presidential candidate for doing is pursuing the case. You know, filing the case is not even about success. Sometimes these cases are filed and eventually what happens even if they're dismissed, but they help to improve the infrastructure, the electoral infrastructure that countries will have. The judgment of 2013 improved quite a lot of the things that we have. The one of 2017 improved quite a lot of things in our electoral system. So I think going there, even if they did have that going by the caliber of lawyers that have been advising Azimio, that they must be having very serious evidence to take it to court. But this kind of cases, what I wanted to say is not just about success. It's also about, you know, you also manage people's emotions. Because you see, right now the votes show that Kenya is actually divided into two. The winner won by about 100,000. One has 7.1, another one has 6.9. Which therefore means that if it is found that some votes were wrongly put in the basket of the winning candidate, that could tilt the constitutional requirement of 50 plus 1. So the going to Supreme Court, I think, is a very good idea. It is going to also help the country heal.
James Mwamu is a former chairman of the Law Society of Kenya. He spoke with me from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. Still in Kenya, the Association of Election Authorities carried out a solidarity mission during the August 9 general election. It included the leadership of electoral management bodies such as those from Malawi, Ghana, Sierra Leone, Rwanda, and Liberia. The group provided peer support to the chairman of Kenya's Independent Elections and Boundaries Commission and to its top officials. It worked closely with the IEBC as it monitored the electoral process until the declaration of the winner of the presidential contest. The Solidarity Mission is the group's first since its establishment in 1996. To learn more about the observations and the major takeaways during the elections in Kenya, I reached Justice Chifundo Kachali, leader of the group. He is also the chairperson of the Malawi Electoral Commission.
Generally, the impression we got was that there was satisfactory arrangements to ensure that people are able to go and vote. Polling stations were generally opened on good time. And subsequent to the polling, we witnessed the vote counting itself in the few polling stations we were able to deploy. And we saw that everything went according to the regulations that had been set down by the Elections Management Body in Kenya, IEBC. And come to the actual vote tallying at the National Tally Center, we were also able to spend a few days there, had occasion to interact with the commissioners on different occasions. And generally, the impression we got at that stage until the Saturday evening, which was the last day we were able to be on the ground, everything was very transparent. To begin with, it was a very good innovation that they put out their results from the polling stations, directly uploaded them on a public portal, which was accessible to everybody. They could see and do their own tallies. And then they had to verify those tallies with the actual original forms at the National Tally Center. And that's a process, I think, that took quite a bit of time because it was quite meticulous.
Justice Kachali, what were the major takeaways that your group think that you could implement in your respective countries that will further enhance the experience of voting or administering elections in your respective countries?
I think there are several issues that you could learn. Definitely, there was a great deal of effort invested into creating interagency cooperation between the security agencies, the IEBC, having a very forthright media engagement that ensured that information was being put out to the public on a regular and credible basis. There was a lot of effort invested into trying to respond to some of the challenges Kenyan elections have generated in the past. The National Cohesion and Integration Commission worked very closely with the IEBC to ensure that the message of peace was really translated across different areas of the country. There was also a great effort to really be out and transparent about all their processes. There was a big deal of preparedness about responding to the various jurisprudence that had come out in 2017 and previously, articulating how the processes should ensure that there's transparency, there's adherence to the rule of law. So generally, there was a very good impression that as a team we formed about the efforts that had been invested by our colleagues to try and ensure that the whole process is as fair and credible as possible.
Will Africa see such collaboration with other election management bodies across Africa? Because next year we'll see a series of countries going to elections. Will we see such solidarity and cooperation with other management bodies soon?
Yes, our association is actually 28 years old and it's sponsored and it works under the auspices of the AU. Our membership is over 49. So the COVID a bit disrupted some of our agenda, and this was actually our first engagement since our executive committee meeting in Accra, Ghana, where our secretariat is housed by the Ghana Electoral Commission. We do have a commitment to ensure that as elections management bodies, we do put in place mechanisms that can encourage peer-to-peer learning, but also solidarity, because running elections can be a very lonely experience, and it takes a lot of understanding for colleagues who do similar work. Of course, there can never be a one-size-fits-all approach. There's lots of diversity in Africa. Africa is not all the same. But there's so many things that you can do together that can create a platform where professionals can share experiences and encourage each other as you seek to build a democratic culture in Africa that will ensure that our citizens are able to have legitimate options when it comes to elections.
So let me ask you, Justice Kachali, you heard one of the contestants in the Kenya's election reject the outcome, saying he was going to go to court, basically disputing the outcome of the election. What is your group stance on this?
Again, going back to the question you asked earlier about what efforts did the IEBC in Kenya do to ensure that they have a framework to conduct a fair election, I think there was also a lot of effort that was invested into ensuring that there's an effective election dispute resolution mechanism, and that includes the judicial process.
Justice Chufundo Kachali is leader of the group called the Association of Election Authorities. He spoke with me from the Malawian capital, Lilongwe. You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotty, in Washington, D.C. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, in Uganda, human rights activists, civil society and opposition groups are calling for the resignation of the chairperson of the Ugandan Human Rights Commission. The groups say Mariam Wangadi appears to be unable to carry out her constitutional mandate to protect the rights of citizens. They cite instances of excessive force used by the police against unarmed protesters. But critics say the accusations against Wangadi are unfounded and unfair. They accuse the groups of disobeying lawful police instructions during demonstrations and often clashing with law enforcement officials. They also called on President Yoweri Museveni to dismiss the call to fire the chairperson of the commission. For more on the call for the resignation of the chairperson of the Uganda Human Rights Commission, I reach attorney Gawaya Tegule. He is a prominent human rights lawyer and a prolific legal writer.
Now, in Africa, Peter, we say that the monkey cannot adjudicate in a case that is concerning whether or not the forest should be cut down. We also say that the hyena has no business adjudicating in a matter where the fate of the meat market is going to be decided.
What does that mean?
It simply means that if the chairperson of the Human Rights Commission has come out clearly to pronounce herself as siding with government, as siding with the security forces, thus the military, the intelligence, and the police, organs which are widely known as the greatest abusers of human rights in this country, then she's no longer fit to sit as chairperson of the Human Rights Commission. It is that simple.
Well, some of her supporters are saying that she is doing her very best under the circumstances, and that the call for her resignation or pressure being put on her to resign is not fair. How do you respond to that?
There is nothing very best that she's doing. I think she comes out as clearly incompetent in as far as the chairperson's office at the Human Rights Commission is concerned. She clearly does not understand the role of the Human Rights Commission. She clearly has not addressed herself to the constitutional provisions regarding the Human Rights Commission and the mandate of that commission to protect human rights, to promote human rights, to ensure that people do not suffer under state agencies, state security agencies, as they did in previous regimes. She has come out to again side with our oppressors. If she's siding with the oppressor, then we don't have a problem with her opinion as siding with the oppressor. All we're saying is she can hold on to her opinions, but not while she's in that office. She really has to resign.
What's the next step after this call for her resignation? What's the next step?
We shall be increasing the pressure on the chairperson to step down. We shall be presenting petitions to various offices to express our displeasure. we want to draw attention of the Ugandans to the importance, to the sacrosanct nature of the Human Rights Commission, and want to tell them that it is not that anybody can come and be Human Rights Commission chairperson just because the president has appointed her. Whoever comes to that office must be of a persuasion that fits the profile of that office. He or she must be somebody who believes in human rights, who believes in protection of the common person from the excesses of the state agency, the state security apparatus, and that they must be willing to put their head on the line, literally, when it comes to protecting the rights of ordinary Ugandans. We think that Mrs. Mariam Wangadia has categorically and unequivocally pronounced herself and positioned herself as somebody completely unfit for that office. The pressure has not even started yet. We're going to increase it. We want to make a point. The other thing is that we want to use the Human Rights Commission as an illustration of how far Mr. Museveni has gone in capturing the state, in taking over departments and agencies of the state that should have been doing that should be executing the constitutional mandate, and they're now doing nothing else but simply dancing to his tunes. We think this is wrong, and as human rights defenders, we shall not take it lying down. We shall oppose it for all that it's worth.
Attorney Gawaya Tegule is a prominent human rights lawyer and a prolific legal writer. He spoke with me from the Ugandan capital, Kampala. The World Food Programme on Friday said half the population of Ethiopia's Tigray region need food aid after nearly 2 years of civil war. Ethiopia's federal authorities are limiting aid to the region, which the head of the World Health Organization calls the worst humanitarian disaster in the world. For VOA, Henry Wilkins reports from the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa.
On Friday, the UN's World Food Programme, WFP, said nearly half of Tigray's estimated 7 million people are in need of food aid. It also said that a fuel embargo on the region is hampering distribution of the aid that gets in. The news comes after Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, the head of the UN's World Health Organization, WHO, and an ethnic Tigrayan, made international headlines asserting that the humanitarian crisis taking place in the region is the worst in the world. The crisis in Tigray, he said, is worse than Ukraine, without any exaggeration, and suggested the neglect may have to do with the colour of Tigrayan people's skin. Aside from claims of neglect internationally, the Ethiopian government has been accused of imposing a humanitarian blockade on Tigray, where pro-government forces have been fighting the rebel Tigrayan People's Liberation Front, the TPLF, since November of 2020. William Davidson is an analyst for the International Crisis Group, a research organisation based in Belgium.
The federal government clearly needs to take action urgently to restore the services, and if there need to be discussions with the authorities in Tigray about the logistics and legalities of how that's done, then those talks should be held. But this dispute should in no way prevent the convening of peace talks to try and reach a permanent ceasefire.
At a news conference Thursday, Bilene Seyum, an Ethiopian federal government representative, said some aid is reaching the Tigray region's capital.
Thus far, for the Tigray region, above 29,000 or close to 30,000 metric tons of food, 31,940 metric tons of non-food items, 300 million birr, above 66,000 liters of fuel, 23.63 metric tons of medicine, 2,096 metric tons of fertilizer have reached Mekelle for distribution to beneficiaries throughout the region.
Humanitarian organizations say this aid is not enough to prevent famine-like conditions in some parts of the region. The national government has said it is ready for unconditional peace talks with the TPLF, which could lead to restoration of aid and services. However, a TPLF representative, Fesaha Askahedom Tesema, says the government is using the prospect of restored aid to force an end to hostilities. He told VOA,
"The AB government, you know, this is its latest position, as you know, is that direct negotiations has to come first. That is, we have to have a direct negotiation and then agreed on a ceasefire. Of course, if that materializes, if there is a positive outcome, they will resume the services. That is as conditional as you can get.
On Thursday, the TPLF reported that the government attacked its troops in Tigray in violation of a humanitarian ceasefire which has been in place since March. The government denied the accusation. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Addis Ababa.
The body of Angola's former president José Eduardo dos Santos arrived in the capital Luanda Saturday. The former president died in a hospital in Barcelona, Spain on July 8. Dos Santos was being treated for an undisclosed ailment. He was 79. Right now, it's time for music from our African collection.
Mama ya, yeah. Asera mabala, asera libre. smile for me when you wake up in the morning, pens you up. You touch me slowly, a checka checka with you. You keep me falling, mpenzi wangu. Na kwenye giza, giza totoro, wendo mwangaza wangu. Chuma wangu, wakupapasia. You know, say, I love you too much, oh. Baby, you know, say, I need you too much, oh. Shetani baby, tumewashinda mahasidi, tumewashinda mahayawani. Oh hala hala, kitanda kiwe sahani mpenzi, nikule nikufaidi, nichoshe niwe tabani. Oh hala hala, mi mtoto wa udongo, mvua siziwezi, kile mansie na magongo, na chechemea. Chechemea, dumange tupige msondo, unirutishe, na mimi anze ndondondo, unyemelea, nyemelea, ja bless my love, amen, bless my baby, oh, amen, bless my one and all, amen, for I am, amen, 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 from the sun and the moon, amen, midnight and the noon, amen, nilingie kipenzi chama.
Not lazy, not enough to you. na. Treat me like your one true lover. There's nothing will go make me leave you. Nobody will love me, reach you. The way you pump for me alive, you keep my dreams alive. Never, 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 never will I ever let you slide. Oh baby, my baby, there is something that you need to know. I'm in love with you.
To make you love or make me feel it, look me, make me love again. What do you want to know? If I tell my heart break, my face on a shot, you know, go back and repeat again. One of the team of Babu Menya, Bamenya, Kakuruma, Kuruma, Kubakuna, Yagala, Muna, Yanumia, I gave a full loving and I gave all of my heart. But I bet you we will never, and they can never ever.
chameleon.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
My baby,
yeah, yeah.
I'm a slave in love.
That was music from the continent, and we hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, including producer Saida Hamdoun, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, the only woman who loves a poor man is his mother. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington, D.C. Good evening, Africa.